This episode of the Beauty Industry Podcast was brought to you by Timely, the world's smartest appointment booking software helping beauty and wellness businesses better manage their time, sanity, and ability to generate revenue. Hello and welcome to the Beauty Industry Podcast, your online support community for the professional beauty industry. I am your host, founding director of Beauty Industry, Tamara Reid. Here, we are closing the competitive gap and speaking your language. This is a platform created and dedicated to the professional beauty industry, valuing community over competition. We serve to help connect you with inspiration from industry experts, expand your knowledge through educational pieces, and bring you the latest in product and technology innovation. This is Beauty Industry. Today's guest is Faye Murray of Your Coach. Faye is the current AVIA Hall of Fame inductee, and she is the first person to be inducted into both the Hairdressing and Beauty Halls of Fame, both of which speak volumes of her work, character, and reputation in the industry. Faye Murray is a well-recognized name in both the hair and beauty world. In fact, many of you would be familiar with Faye's name as it has been mentioned countless times across our episodes from industry leaders like Carla McDiarmid of Macquarie Medisma and Jessica Brigginshaw of Brow Squad. Faye Murray is a business coach and a motivational speaker specializing in the hair and beauty industries with over 18 years experience and was one of the very first people to be titled a coach in the professional industry. An impressive list of awards and achievements include Faye being a foundation and board member of the Australian Hairdressing Council, where she was honored for 10 years service. She's also been a member of the judging panels for national awards for both hair and beauty and has presented at national and international business conferences as well as hair and beauty expos. Faye's approach to coaching is that it will always be about the personalized coaching experience and believes that every salon has different needs, therefore each coaching session must be unique to those needs. A session with Faye focuses on increasing sales, improving profit, and building a strong and stable team, some of which she shares with us today. From Your Coach, today we welcome Faye Murray.
Thank you so much, Tamara. I'm actually quite excited. I'm even a bit nervous, and I never get nervous, so this is kind of the unknown, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, what kind of cheeky questions can I throw at you?
You can throw anything at me at all. No.
We'll keep it nice and tame for you, Faye. We start the podcast every way the same each week by asking our guests how they entered into the beauty industry. And I would love to ask you that same question. Where did it all start for you?
Oh, my God. I've got to go back a long way for this one. I had been working as a general manager of a very large hairdressing company. We had about 380 staff and more than 30 salons. And I reached a point one day when I thought, you know what, I feel like a change. And after you've been doing that for a long time, it's like, what will I do? So I remember talking to a girlfriend of mine, Lee Watt, who works in the hairdressing industry, and I said, what can I do? And she said, why don't you become a business coach? And 18 years ago, I said, what on earth's a business coach? And she said, look, there's this lady, Gita McKenna, who has just launched the first business coaching program. Why don't you talk to her? So I did. And Gita said, Faye, there's no opportunities in the hairdressing industry, but there is in the beauty industry. And I thought, oh, that'll be fine. I know a lot about beauty. Wrong. So I started as a coach in the beauty industry 18 years ago, and I had to learn as I went along. Whilst the two industries are very similar in lots of ways, they're very, very different. And I had some amazing people who I would hop on the phone and I remember ringing Sandy Dellett one day and saying, what's microdermabrasion? Because it had just come in. And I would ring people, I'd go to seminars, and I learned a lot about the beauty industry. So today, I'm very comfortable, even though I'm not a therapist, working across the beauty industry as well as hairdressing.
Amazing. Do you think if it wasn't for that person saying to you, why don't you become a coach, you would have become a coach?
Oh, I had no idea, because in those days there were nobody knew what a business coach was. And that was a question that people would say to me when I'd say, oh, I'm a business coach, they'd say, what does a business coach do? Because nobody knew. So it was really the first steps towards what we see today, which everybody knows what a business coach is and everybody knows the value of it, but it was very new then.
Yeah, interesting. And I want to chat to you about that bridge between hair and beauty because even for myself, a lot of people have said, oh, you know, why did you call it beauty industry? You should have called it hair and beauty industry so that you can do hair and beauty. And I always say, no, I'm going to stick to my lane and I'm going to stick to beauty because we are so different. Why do you think there is that such a big difference, even though we're both predominantly women, we both do a lot of services, you know, we have very similar training. What's the difference there?
Between the two industries, we're very similar, but there's a big gap in so many ways. I think that the amount of training that beauty therapists do, and ongoing training, and the level of training that they do it at is very different. Hairdressing is very creative. Once you get your basics, it's very creative. And they're very different in that aspect. I think that the relationships that you develop with your clients is also very, very different. And I think it's very respectful of people like you and I to identify that they are different and to treat the two industries differently. And that's certainly something that I'm very mindful of.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you say that because I know there are a lot of coaches or mentors these days who shadow across both hair and beauty, and I see them trying to put the same cookie cutter approach across both, and I think, oh goodness, I don't know if that's going to work.
No, and I guess that with beauty, I do rely an awful lot on expertise. If somebody asks me a question and I don't know, I would never try and bluff my way through it. I would say, I have no idea of the answer to that, but I'll ring my friend Gay Wardle, or I might ring you, or I'll ring Carla McDiamond, somebody who has got the expertise that I don't have in that area. And I'm so lucky that I've developed a network of people that I can pick up the phone and say, hey, what's your thoughts on this? Or how do you think this should be managed? Or what do you think this should have? What should happen here? So don't try and bluff your way through it. For me in the beauty industry, I'll ask if I don't know anything that's a technical or a skills-based thing.
That's really good advice. Faye, how did you get all of your skills and knowledge to go out and do your very first coaching session? I mean, you hadn't really heard of what a coach is. No one really knows what a coach is. What did that first session look like? And do you remember who that first client was and how did you get them? There's a lot of questions there, I realise.
No, I'm going to tell you who the first client was because she's still in the industry and she's one of the leaders in the industry, and that is, it was Stephanie Shepherd.
Amazing.
And Stephanie Shepherd obviously has Stephanie's Luxury Day Spas now, and Steph is the most amazing lady, but I'm going to take a few minutes to tell you this story because it's really special. Steph then owned one salon at Bulimba, not the one she's got now, quite a small salon. And it was after I'd been working with Steph for a little while that she decided she would open a bigger salon at Bulimba. And she found this lovely premises, which she currently owns now, which is a very big premises compared to what she had. And I remember saying to Steph, we went down, we had a look at the premises, and it was just a big open shell. It was a brand new shop, just concrete floor, concrete walls. And I said to Steph, let's get all the staff down here. Let's put foot soak bowls down, let's put towels down, and let's put candles everywhere. And we took the whole then staff down at about 4:30 one afternoon, and we shared that this was going to be their new salon, and we talked about the experiences and things that Steph was going to do to make this one of the first and amazing spas. And so that was really special, and Steph was my very first coaching client. And I don't coach Steph anymore, but we have a great relationship. She'll pick up the phone, I'll pick up the phone. And I'm so proud of what she's achieved as a therapist and as a business owner because she's a very special lady.
Wow, I love that. Imagine that, Stephanie Shepherd is your first client for what we know from her now. Oh my goodness. And what a magical little thing to do with the team. I think when the team see from the very get-go, you know, the vision and the aspirations for what the business could be, they must have just felt so special.
It was really gorgeous, and I can still see it. There was about maybe 14 staff sitting around in this shell with all these little fairy candles around. It was just gorgeous.
Incredible. And so where did you get all of your strategy and your material?
Oh, my knowledge. Well, I had been the general manager. I'd owned salons of my own. I went through a really messy divorce, and this is going back, you know, before I worked for the LaCourte organisation. My brother, who is no longer with us, always used to say, for an intelligent woman, you choose the worst men in your life. And I went through a very messy divorce, and that's when I went to work for the LaCourte organisation, which was the organisation that I mentioned had the 30-plus salons and the 300-plus staff, or 380-plus staff. And as the general manager of that, I was very hands-on. I'm a real people person, and even though I did all of the administrative things, I was surrounded by an amazing team, but I would get out into salons and customer service, and I really was very hands-on. So that was a period of collecting knowledge and collecting information and collecting skills, learning what not to do by making mistakes. But I think that I'm very fortunate to have a natural affinity with people and to be a really good people manager. I won't blow my trumpet about many things, but I know I'm a good people manager. And I guess moving from there forward, one of the things that I don't know whether I'm just very fortunate with this, but my brain allows me to store an awful lot of information. You know how, and tomorrow, I'm sure this happens to you, something, a situation will happen and you'll be able to pull out of your brain, which people call experience, something that you haven't used for a long, long time, but it's in there. And so I think it's a time thing. I think it's an attitude thing. It's a willingness to want to learn. It's a willingness to be flexible and to move with the time. So in my little head today, there still is a lot of information and I still keep packing it in there. So
incredible. Somebody once told me that with information, we delete, distort, or diarize, you know, and I think if we take the information at any given point of time, whether it's a lesson or something that we think, oh gosh, I don't want to do this again, or whether it's a great learning, and we diarize that rather than just kind of skipping over it and distorting it and deleting it, you've got more experience and wisdom as you go on, don't you?
And you learn more from your mistakes. Well, I think this is a general statement, but I believe that those of us that are lucky enough to learn from those mistakes and tuck them away, as you say, diarise them and think, I'm never going to do that again because that didn't work. Yeah,
that's exactly right. How much has your strategy with regards to coaching changed over the years since that first session?
It changed dramatically. It changes all the time. And that's something that I'm kind of proud of, that I'm really receptive to change. I change things all the time. There are a couple of key points during the year. I stop work in December. I don't start again until mid-January. And I use that six-week period apart from Christmas week to redevelop new things. And then I do two planning sessions during the year. And I choose various people to do those with, to ask what they think people need, what we should change, how we should do it. So I'm continually looking for new strategies, but compared to what it was when we first started, it's grown enormously, the coach's role. And I think different coaches interpret that differently, and that's okay. Different coaches coach in a very different way. And I guess mine, it's always been about personalised coaching. I don't do group coaching, and other people do, and it works very well for them. But for me, each individual salon gets individual coaching, individual analysis, individual everything. And that works for me. It is a bit more time consuming, and I probably don't make as much money out of it as I could if I did other strategies, but it works for me.
Incredible. And I have a question for you. Are you a Gemini?
No, but what do you think I might be?
Oh,
you're close.
Are you're a Taurus?
I sure am.
Oh, interesting. Okay, because I'm a Gemini and I can adapt very well. And I always, when I hear, you know, adaptability and changeability, I think, maybe you're a Gemini. So Taurus, interesting.
Yeah, 800 miles an hour. Yep. Stock everything in there. Do as much as you can. Bullet gate. But I think maturity has taught me to slow down Just a little, not much, just a little, but no, I'm chorus, yeah.
I love it. Faye, something that I've heard from many of your coaching clients, and you mentioned before, Carla McDiarmid, also Jessica Brigginshaw has sung your praises on the podcast before. They have all pointed out that before coming on with you, they perhaps buried their head in the sand a little bit in terms of the figures and understanding the metrics around how business runs. And I know that that's something you've mentioned to me before, that you are really passionate as well. What kind of, you know, movement can we get? Because I know numbers can be sticky. If a business owner just has no idea where to look at their numbers, what are three main numbers that you always talk about that you think every business owner should know?
Okay, I'm actually really pleased that you raised this, because one of the fears I think that people have in engaging a business coach is that they don't understand this side of their business. They've connected with an accountant that perhaps talks in a totally different language. And so rather than be embarrassed, is probably the right word, about acknowledging that they don't understand this, they do tend to bury, or they understand little bits, or even more concerning, they listen to general rules which don't necessarily apply to their business. So this is probably a learning curve for me, and I certainly didn't do this when I first started, and I don't know at what point I made the decision to work with this formula, but it's a formula that works, and it's so flexible. It can be worked across any size salon, beauty, hair, one that combines both. And what I do is I say that I do a little analysis that I call, there's 100 cents in the dollar. And basically what that means is if you spend 105 cents out of every dollar, you aren't making any money. In fact, you're going backwards. So everybody, there's a certain amount that you can spend on all aspects, but there are three key aspects, all of which you have some control over, but they are your biggest things. One is wages. Second one is product costs. And the third one, you might say you don't have a lot of control over, and that's rent, but you do have control over the percentage of rent, or the proportion of the 100 cents in the dollar determined by your income. So I say for every salon, it doesn't matter who you are or where you are, you can spend 65 cents in every dollar, or 65%. And the figures can then move around. So a salon might have a rent percentage that is really low. It might be down at 4% because they're in an area that doesn't have high traffic flow. It might be an older building. And if they have that, they can spend a bit more on wages because they don't have the traffic flow. So therefore, they may not have constant appointments. So the three things, wages, rent and stock, I always try and keep those as close as I can to 65%. Now, when I start working with a client, some people will be up over 70%. They might be 72, 74%, and they're saying, "Faye, but I'm not making any money. I'm working hard." And so that's the first place we start. Look at trying to get that close to 65%. And then the other question that other people will say is, "Hey, there's no way I can get it to 65. And my confidence comes with the fact that I do have many, many, many people that I start with at 74, 72, and we get them to 65, 66. You know, we get as close as we can. And I certainly do have some that I get under the 65. Not a lot, but I'm happy at 65. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, even when I was working in large franchise clinics, we would have a look at wages and labor percentage being the ideal around that 42-43%. Mm-hmm. So this makes a lot of sense if we're adding on stock and rent into that as well to get to that 65. Yeah, I love that.
It's simple, it's easy, and then you can play with everything else. Of course, you've got to look at all your expenses, and I've got some really simple systems for doing that. I keep it simple where figures are concerned, because other people, you can see people, if you're doing face-to-face, their eyes just glaze over when you start talking about figures. And I guess that on that point too, I just want to make, and I think this is a really interesting thing for business coaches, my role is never to tell a salon what to do. It's never to say, you have to do this, or you must do this, or you've got to change this. It's to guide, support, ideas, excite, all those sorts of things. But if somebody feels very strongly about something, that's their decision. If I think it's a really bad decision, I'll try and guide them. But ultimately, if someone says, no, I'm going to do this, that's their decision.
After the break, Faye shares with us some insight into missed opportunities that are presenting in our businesses, her relevancy in the industry, and to how she has managed to keep her clients in her coaching programs for countless amounts of years. But first, a word from today's Beauté partner. Community, you know all too well how pro I am about all things online booking and working smarter, not harder in 2020, and our friends at Timely help you to do just that. Timely is a powerful booking and business management software for businesses of any size and ambition. Designed to help you save hours on admin, deliver exceptional client experience, establish a much-loved brand and grow your revenue with over 500 software updates every year, Timely is always on a mission to help you get the best from your business. Timely works beautifully with Tyro, Xero, QuickBooks, MailChimp, Square, Google Calendar, and more. So why not join over 40,000 global Timely customers today? If you've been thinking about making the switch from pen and paper or want to test a new salon software system, visit www.gettimely.com to start a free 14-day trial. The Timely team has an exclusive offer for the listeners of today's episode where you get 50% off Timely for your first 2 months. It's such an incredible offer by using the promo code TAMARA20. That's Tamara and the number 20. Thank you so much to the team at Timely for making this episode possible. And now back to Faye.
Yeah, I actually really, really appreciate that because I think also too, from a business owner perspective, sometimes business owners are looking for the magic bullet and they're looking for somebody to tell them what to do. But a coach really should be almost like a cheerleader, like you would see a coach at the footy, you know, they're guiding the play. They're not running with the ball, but they're guiding the team how to kick the goal, for example.
Exactly. Yep. And a coach should have lots of ideas. And I know many of the people out there in the industry are fabulous in terms of sharing ideas with a whole range of things. But I do hear people say, I've had a coach before and they told me to do this and they insisted that I do this and they set me a goal that was this. And, you know, as you know, you can't work to somebody else's goals. They've got to be your own.
Absolutely. On that 65 in the dollar, I don't know if you know Teresa Russo down in South Australia.
I know of Teresa, yes.
There you go. She mentioned to me on the very first phone call we ever had and connected with a story that her grandfather told her, which has stayed with me ever since for about a year now. She said her grandfather used to, say, for example, give her $20 to go to the shop. And when she came back in the door, he would never say, how much did you spend? He would say, how much change did you get in return? And I've kind of thought about that ever since in terms of just looking at my bank account. I'm going, okay, it's what I've got in. I might have $1,000 in from, you know, a bill or whatever that looks like. And then how much am I holding on to that thousand? So if I'm paying for my insurance or if I'm paying for my registration or whatever that looks like, how much am I keeping? And that just simple tiny mentality has really changed the way that I think about things as well. And that's very similar to what you're saying. If we're spending 65 in the dollar, how much is that change? And then what are we doing with that change as well?
Exactly. Yeah, that is so important. And the other thing that I think is perhaps worthy of mentioning here is you can have, and I'll just use weekly figures, you can be taking $20,000 a week and not making any money. Or you can be taking $6,000 a week and you can still get a good return out of it. So, you know, people, sometimes smaller salons will look at big salons and go, oh my God, they must be making a fortune. If you haven't got those percentages in line, there are lots of big salons out there that are not necessarily returning the income that they should be getting. What's left over is what you're saying, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even before I started Beauté Industry, I was obviously working with a lot of different businesses and things like that. But I really, since I've come into watching my own figures, I kind of look at my ingoings and outgoings, and I'll go into now a business, for example, to meet with a brand, and I go, oh my goodness, this warehouse is gorgeous and they've got staff everywhere and, you know, the fit out is stunning. And I think, how much is the rent? How much are they paying? packages per hour, you know, how much are all of their overheads now? And I'm flipped that and I'm thinking differently because I'm seeing, you know, how much I'm spending. I mean, in all transparency, my overheads are about $2,600 a month. So I need to know that break even so that as well, I can make sure that if I get $3,000 that month, I know that I've still got that $400 to spare in my back pocket. Faye, I want to have a chat to you as well about missed opportunities, because this is something I've heard you speak about quite a few times, and you often write about as well the missed opportunities that clients are missing out on during their service-based treatments, and this is true of the hair and beauty. How are we continuously missing these buying and these upgrading signals from clients? I mean, I'm sure you've been preaching about this the whole entire time you've been coaching. So how is this something that we're still talking about?
Okay, I think we're going to be still talking about this forever. Firstly, I'll give you my definition of what an opportunity is. And opportunities, an opportunity is something that we see, hear, or feel every day of our life that we take advantage of. Mm. And opportunities fall at our feet all the time, but most people, they see them, they hear them, and they feel them, but they don't do anything about it. So I think that's probably the key to the difference between many people who are very successful and many people who are not. And if we relate it to, as you say, an in-salon situation, perhaps with clients. So I believe that we are problem solvers, and our role as a, let's say I'm a therapist, as a therapist, is to solve the problems of clients. Clients don't always know what their problems are, and the way that we can gather information in order to solve those problems are to ask questions, to look, and to feel. And feel is emotion as well as touch. Once we gather that information, then we have all that knowledge in our head to share. And I believe that as therapists, and therapists are much better at this than hairdressers are, I believe that therapists do that reasonably well most of the time, most of the people. They do that really well, that they care, they're interested, they do that. The thing that they find most difficult, and I don't think a lot of people do this as well as they should or could, is to invite the client to purchase. And it's not, I don't ever, ever, ever talk about selling, because I'm not a salesperson, but I'm extremely good at, because I'm passionate about what I do, to invite clients to be engaged and to come on board. And so I think if therapists can lose that culture of I'm going to sell some products today and talk about helping, and then the invitation to buy, I believe, has to be personalised. And it might be something like we've gone through, you and I've had a lovely chat, Tamara, and I would say, now, Tamara, the things we've chatted about today or spoken about today, these are the products that I suggest that you're going to need until I see you next time, which is going to be in about 6 weeks' time. The reason that I've suggested them most importantly is because we've identified your concerns are this, 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 and this, and I am so, so certain that you're going to get a great result from them. Whereas I think there's a generalisation of that invitation to buy, and the generalisation is not them linking back to whatever the condition is, whatever the advice is. But if we add on to the invitation to buy, and I know this is going to help with your pigmentation, and I know that this is going to help because we've talked about exfoliation, whatever it is, making that invitation to buy. So look for the opportunities, and I think sometimes we don't feel those opportunities. Did that make sense, what I just said there?
Yeah, 100%. And also just in that little language I noticed you use within the invitation, you're not saying, I think this could be a great cleanser for you. You know, you're saying, I am certain, I know that this is going to be the product for you. I think that probably comes a lot within therapists, just self-worth and self-knowledge as well. They know the product, they really do. They've gone to the training, they know the ingredients, they've just treated the client's skin for an hour. So why are we still saying, I think this could work for you, because do you think or do you know it could work?
Yeah, look, this is just the perfect product. Whatever the words are and whatever the enthusiasm, it has to be me as the therapist connecting with you as the client and saying this is right for you. Not a lot of people use this or this gives good results to many people. Not that generalization. It's got to be about you. And that's probably something that I only started to click with the last couple of years. It's become part of my rapport the last couple of years. But if you can get people to be personalised and then get that invitation to buy all of the time, some say yes, some say no. But that to me is the thing that I think we miss most of all.
Yeah, incredible. And I'm thinking just from a beauty perspective, and this can also be hair as well, we see, hear and feel in our diagnosis. So after we've cleansed the skin, we're literally doing that. We're seeing the skin, we're feeling the skin, we've got touch connection with our client, and we are hearing what they're saying. We're hearing their concerns. So if we have a treatment and we skip over the diagnosis part, we can't see, we can't hear, we can't feel, we can't recommend, we can't invite them to purchase. So that diagnosis part is something I preach about all the time. It's so essential.
Mm-hmm. Something that somebody said to me just maybe 2 weeks ago, and I've heard it many times before, but I haven't heard it for a while. And it was a salon owner who said, and she's closed at the moment, but she was putting training programs together for her girls in a beauty salon. And she said, Faye, the biggest objection I get is the girls don't have time to do this. She said, I get it all the time. And I said to her, how long do you allocate for the massage component of the facial treatment? And I can't remember her exact answer. It may have been 12 minutes or whatever. I said, cut that back by 3 minutes and allocate the time to something that really is more beneficial. The relaxation part, the beautiful massage, whatever it is gorgeous and I love it. But when someone's coming for a facial treatment, they're coming to get results. And if you took 3 minutes off the massage, no one's going to notice. But if you added it onto the diagnosis and the consultation, everyone's going to benefit. You don't need me to tell you this. You know this all. But I just think it's sometimes, you know, you just got to tweak things so that the best value for the client is available.
Yeah, I'm so happy you said 3 minutes there, because that's what I say as well. 3 minutes. Yeah, well, so many people say, oh, I don't have time, I don't have time. And they think that the diagnosis, the consultation, the prescription needs to be this big, lengthy spiel, and I'm about to write an essay for the client and I'm waiting for her to turn me down and I'm expecting that she's either going to buy a product or not going to buy a product, which, you know, in the expectation too, if you get let down, then if you get let down 10 times a day with each client, then you feel a bit crap, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that 3 minutes, it's a couple of sentences. It's understanding what you know. It's confirming with the client that they've got a concern. You're the problem solver, and then let them know that. It's perfect. How do business owners assist their team to do this, though? Because I know there's going to be a lot of business owners listening to this going, great, now how do I get my therapist to do this?
Repetition. And not saying the same thing over and over again. I think as a communicator, as a salon owner, as a trainer, particularly when you're training within your own environment, same days, same things, same all the time, you've got to have stories, you've got to have examples, you've got to say the same thing but in different ways. And if you're sharing something with your team and you get the eye roll, or you get the body language that says, oh, we've heard this all before, can't happen, won't happen, I suggest that people don't address those in a team environment, because that then becomes rent-a-crowd. You know, one person says, oh, well, this, you can't do this, and this doesn't work and whatever, and everybody else joins in. So if you have a team of four and you've got two people that do it really well, you've got one that kind of sort of does it and one that never does, handle them individually as much as you can. Still do your team trainings and things, but individually, because those individual people have individual reasons for not doing it as they could or should. And you've got to work through those reasons and then look for little points of recognition. If somebody achieves even something that's a little step, that was really good. That's a good step in the right direction. I know that she didn't purchase the two products that you wanted her to commit to, but she did one. And so what did you do that was different? How did you feel? So little steps for recognition. A lot of salon owners are very good at recognizing the big things, but they forget to recognize the little ones.
Yes. And a lot of this comes back to being quite a hands-on business owner or a manager if the business owner is out of the business, and actually understanding, I call it having a bird's eye view of what's going on in your business. You know, you should know when a client's about to come out. You should know why the therapist is in the back room. You should know who that client is sitting down there, so that you can almost orchestrate the entire you know, happenings of your space and be having these conversations with your client as they come up with your therapist, rather, as they come out of the treatment room. So tell me about your client. What did you have a chat to her about? I heard that you said X, Y, Z. Why don't we tweak that language next time and go back in and do this? And I've done this with some incredible clinics, and they have just boosted, you know, the morale as well, because the business owner's in there, they're having the conversations, not only the client results and obviously the revenue for the day, but how good is that when your business owner's having a chat to you about the client? It just makes so the day so special.
Absolutely. There's something else I just thought of as you were chatting there, and I think it might be appropriate to share. Many salons have receptionists, or many salons with busy therapists will hand over to somebody else to see the client out. And you hear this, and I hear this, where there's not a mention of the client is going to take these products today. And the person, so let's say it's a receptionist, says to the client, now, would you like to take any products with you today?
Yeah.
So what I suggest is that you turn to the therapist before she runs away and says, now, Susie, what products would you like me to organise for Marianne today? And Marianne's next appointment, when is that going to be best? Don't ask the client, ask the therapist. And if the therapist has done her job, there will have been a conversation and she'll be able to answer it. But if she hasn't done her job, but if she knows you're going to ask that question, she's much more inclined to do the job in the treatment room than have you ask the question and then her have to say to the client, oh, when would you like to rebook? Or, oh, that product we talked about. So that's just a little one, but if you can get that to happen, that's a bit clever too.
Incredible. I almost already know the answer to my next question, because just hearing you, I mean, it's a no-brainer. But some of your coaching clients have been on your books for over 5 years. What is it about your personality or your coaching or your relationship with these people that allow you to retain business owners for that length of time?
Actually, I just went all goosey when you asked me that question. That's almost an emotional question. I feel it. I'm not going to cry, but I almost feel like I want to cry. I do have a lot of clients that I've had for a long time. I've actually got clients that I've had for 15 years.
Wow.
Which sounds, and, you know, in between, a lot of my clients, sit around the 7-8 year mark. And I do have, occasionally I'll have someone that'll come for 6 months and then they'll say, hey, I feel like I want to go and try this on my own. And that's okay as well. Those that, when I've had a client for more than 12 months, you know, there's a really strong connection. I, as well as doing monthly coaching, so I do a monthly coaching for an hour, but in between, my clients can ring me at any time they feel they need to. And other coaches have said to me, how on earth do you manage that? Because I have about 90 clients. It's very manageable because nobody will ring me. Sometimes they ring me just for a chat or a cuddle. But nobody rings me unless they have a need. And I figure if they send me a message or whether they call me or whatever it is, they need me. So, and I'm not somebody, because I'm a Taurus, we are having a nice chat today. But if someone asks me a question that I can answer in a minute, I'll answer it in a minute. So I'm not taking 15 minutes on something that I can do quickly. So I don't waste time. So there is that support. They also get a whole lot of things in between their coachings, which are nice little fun things to stay in contact. But I care about each and every one of them. I know a lot about all of their businesses. I know a lot about all of their staff. And I just think it's a connection and it's a trust. I trust them. They trust me. I always have to keep coming up with new ideas. And again, that sometimes people will say, if you've been working with someone for 10 years, how do you come up with new ideas? So this is my little secret. I don't think I've ever shared this with anyone. Every month I write down on a sheet about 2 pages of ideas. And they're things I've read, things I've heard, things I've come out of my head. And then when I'm preparing a coaching session, I take time to prepare each coaching session and I go through and look at what that client's up to. But I go through my 2-page list and I pick out maybe 4 or 5 things that are new, different, or that are refocused. So I guess preparation means that I'm continually giving those clients new content and making sure that it's not just same old, same old. We're not just talking about figures. We're talking about new stuff or revising on something that I haven't talked about for a while.
Yes. Well, that was exactly going to be my next question. How do you stay inspired? How do you stay motivated? I mean, some coaches are like, oh, I'm going to do a 6-month program and then see you later. And you know, for you to have a client for 15 years is absolutely incredible. And for them as well, that is a lot of trust, but for them to be able to trust that you will always have fresh content or revisit or refocus something and to know that the content isn't going to be stale or the same ideas, I think is huge.
Well, I get most of my inspiration from my clients, you know, my energy, because I say your energy equals 20%. And my energy comes from my clients. And that doesn't mean if Mikey, who owns Horsemeat in Brisbane, Horsemeat Disco, you know Horsemeat Disco, don't you? Mm-hmm. Mikey's one of my favourite clients and he's just the most gorgeous man. But I would never take, if Mikey said to me, oh, Faye, I've got this great new idea, I'd never take Mikey's idea and share it with somebody else because it's Mikey's idea. So I have to be very, very, very aware of those sorts of things. What was the question? Where I get my inspiration from? Yes, my clients give me great inspiration, but I don't pinch their ideas. I have an industry network of people who are positive and inspirational in their own rights, and I chat to them all the time. I pick up the phone. I feel very comfortable about picking up the phone or doing a Zoom or a Skype or something. I have one very, very close special buddy, and everybody knows that she's my special friend, and that's Paula Hibbard. And Paula is one of Australia's top hairdressers, and we lean on each other. She's my go-to if I have a bad day. I don't dump on anybody. I don't dump on my partner because I know that's useless. But Paula will never tell me what to do, but she'll always listen. She'll always tell me how clever and wonderful I am. And she's definitely my go-to. But I've got lots of other industry people that I respect enormously that I look at for inspiration. So that's kind of where I drag it from. I do a lot of education outside the industry. That's what keeps me in touch with reality. And I have no special people that I look at. I see something, I hear something, and I think, oh, that'd be interesting, I'll do that. But mostly about making myself feel healthy, healthy in the brain, healthy in my attitude, healthy in my energy, and healthy myself. I'm very proud of the fact that now I worked with John McCourt for 18 years and I've been doing this now for 18 years, so that's a lot of time. I had one day off sick when I was working with John McCourt, and I've had one day off sick since I've been doing this. I never get sick. I've got a naturopath who's a client of mine as well. I love Peter Mullen. I think if you stay in a healthy world with your energy, your body stays healthy as well.
Yeah, and I can hear that this just kind of lights you up and it fulfills you inside as well. And it, for me, it's all about the company you keep, you know, and the names that you mentioned, Gay and Paula, I mean, beautiful souls who, you know, no wonder you're always feeling happy and energized because they don't let that negative or, you know, that kind of industry chit-chat drag them down either.
No, well, actually, Paula suggested something. We're doing a virtual, I think it's called a cocktail evening. And Paula and I, she's organised it, so she's got to tell me exactly what we're doing. But we're going to have a little cocktail party. We're going to have a wine. And Paula said to me, we've had so many RSVP. I didn't even know we'd invited other people. So I will have to find out today exactly what we're doing. But I've got the wine organised and I've got the cheese organised for it.
Incredible. I'll bring the gin.
Okay.
Hey, what excites you about the industry and the future? I mean, I'm really curious. We're in such a funny time of the industry at the moment and life, really. What do you see the next 12 months, 2 years looking like?
Okay. I've been asked this question a lot, but my answer that I'm going to give you now is the same answer that I gave somebody 4 weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago. And this, I will preface this by saying this is my opinion, and I have no idea whether I'm right or not, but this is my opinion. It's obviously going to change. The way that we live our lives are going to change, and our industry is definitely going to change. I believe that we are going to lose about 20% of the number of salons that we currently have in Australia. And I think that's probably a positive compared to lots of other countries in the world. And I think that those 20% will come from two different markets. There are a lot of people out there who own a hairdressing salon that go to work every week and they work hard and they don't charge enough and they really don't make any money at all. They struggle to pay their bills, but they love their clients and they love what they do and they continue to do it. I think that a number of those will be forced to make a decision to not continue, particularly when rents get in arrears and things like that. And there are people out there who, and it doesn't matter whether they've got a staff of four or whether they've got a staff of 20, but sometimes they are in that bracket where people go, they are so good, they're so wonderful. And the example I use is that they live way beyond their means. Not necessarily, they might have a very good business, but they're not looking at cash flow. They're not being well advised by an accountant. And I think some of those moving into this period had big tax bills. They had debt that they weren't working with well. And I think we will lose a percentage of those as well. The benefits from that to the industry is the skill shortage that we've had that has been getting worse and worse and worse, I think will lessen for a bit. And I think good salons that are still trading well will have a choice of some good employees for a period of 12 months, maybe even 2 years. But I think people will be much more respectful of hygiene. And I actually did a video just recently on that. I think your clients are going to demand hygiene, and I think we have to really pull our socks up with that. But I think we're going to have a couple of months or a few months, and I don't know when beauty's going to get open again. I do hope that, we travel along a safe road so that can happen soon. But I think when we open for the first little bit, you're going to be as busy as we possibly can imagine. Mm-hmm. So make sure you've got nobody saying, oh, well, I'm still going on holidays in August. Get ready for that. It's going to be busy. And I think if you keep it tight with your expenditure, manage your staff well, people have still got money to spend. I know I got my credit card bill in today for the last period, and it is down by about 80%.
Oh.
Because I haven't been anywhere. I haven't done anything. I haven't spent any money. So those of us that are not spending any money, but it's still got some, income, or it's still got support, we're still going to have money to spend. So to answer your question, I think we're going to go through some rough times for some people, but I think there's going to be some positives that come out of it for a lot of others.
Yeah. I am completely with you there. I think about 20 to 30% won't survive. I think the ones who do it's going to be like Christmas. It's really going to be like Christmas all the way through until about February at least. So some people have been saying to me, oh, Tamara, my therapist is asking for annual leave. And I'm saying, let her take the annual leave now.
Pay her to take
the annual leave now, because then she won't be asking for it in that blackout period. She won't be taking it until next March. So get the annual leave out of the way now, get them back on the floor as soon as possible.
Yeah, and the salon owners have got to go back into, they've got to get ready now to reopen their business. They've got to make some changes so the staff can see changes. And that energy that we talked about before at 20%, it's got to be up that day you reopen.
Absolutely. That's incredible advice. Faye, Murray, thank you so much for coming and having a chat with me on the podcast today. It's been so special.
Thank you for asking me, and I wish everybody the best for the future, and I'm sure it will be one day, very soon, great for the beauty industry again.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's conversation. Isn't Faye just pure magic? What I so appreciate about Faye is the practicality of her advice. Things like looking at what we spend out of the dollar and see, hear, feel mentality of client opportunities are things that you can take away from this conversation and implement immediately into your business. So lots of gold nuggets that you're left with today. As you all know by now, I am sure I am an independent podcaster without the support of an industry body or professional network. So the best way that you can support me and this episode is by sharing our podcast with others that you might think enjoy the listen. Help your friends and colleagues connect with the beauty goodness by taking a photo or sharing how you're listening across your Instagram and your Facebook stories by tagging us at Beauty Industry and myself at Tamara Shaw Reid. This episode has come by way of your request that I speak with Faye. So if you have any further guests that you would like me to speak with, make sure you send me a DM and let me know. In the meantime, we'll continue the conversation over in the Beauté Industry Facebook community. Until next time, stay connected.